by the meaningless rite of baptism. Couldn't they cross their fingers or whisper "not" under their breath while being baptized? No, they couldn't, because they had been brought up in a moderate religion and therefore took the whole ridiculous charade seriously. As for me, I think only of poor little Edgardo, unwittingly born into a world dominated by the religious mind, hapless in the crossfire, all but orphaned in an act of well-meaning but, to a child, shattering cruelty.
Fourth, to pursue the same theme, is the assumption that a six-year-old child can properly be said to have a religion at all, whether it is Jewish or Christian or anything else. To put it another way, the idea that baptizing an unknowing, uncomprehending child can change him from one religion to another at a stroke seems absurd. But it is surely not more absurd than labelling a tiny child as belonging to any particular religion in the first place. What mattered to Edgardo was not his religion. He was too young to possess thought-out religious opinions, but the love and care of his parents and family, and he was deprived of those by celibate priests whose grotesque cruelty was mitigated only by their crass insensitivity to normal human feelings, an insensitivity that comes all too easily to a mind hijacked by religious faith.
Even without physical abduction, isn't it always a form of child abuse to label children as possessors of beliefs that they are too young to have thought about? Yet the practice persists to this day, almost entirely unquestioned. To question it is my main purpose in this chapter. Physical and mental abuse. Priestly abuse of children is nowadays taken to mean sexual abuse, and I feel obliged at the outset to get the whole matter of sexual abuse into proportion and out of the way. Others have noted that we live in a time of hysteria about paedophilia, a mob psychology that calls to mind the Salem witch hunts of 1692. In July 2000, the News of the World, widely acclaimed in the face of stiff competition as Britain's most disgusting newspaper, organised a name and shame campaign, barely stopping short of inciting vigilantes to take direct, violent action against paedophiles. The house of a hospital paediatrician was attacked by zealots unacquainted with the difference between a paediatrician and a paedophile. The mob hysteria over paedophiles has reached epidemic proportions and driven parents to panic. Today's Just Williams, today's Huck Finns, today's Swallows and Amazons are deprived of the freedom to roam that was one of the delights of childhood in earlier times, when the actual as opposed to perceived risk of molestation was probably no less. In fairness to the News of the World, at the time of its campaign, passions had been aroused by a truly horrifying murder, sexually motivated, of an 8-year-old girl kidnapped in Sussex. Nevertheless, it is clearly unjust to visit upon all paedophiles a vengeance appropriate to the tiny minority who are also murderers. All three of the boarding schools I attended employed teachers whose affection for small boys overstepped the bounds of propriety. That was indeed reprehensible. Nevertheless, if, 50 years on, they had been hounded by vigilantes or lawyers as no better than child murderers, I should have felt obliged to come to their defence, even as the victim of one of them, an embarrassing but otherwise harmless experience. The Roman Catholic Church has borne a heavy share of such retrospective opprobrium. For all sorts of reasons, I dislike the Roman Catholic Church, but I dislike unfairness even more, and I can't help wondering whether this one institution has been unfairly demonised over the issue, especially in Ireland and America. I suppose some additional public resentment flows from the hypocrisy of priests whose professional life is largely devoted to arousing guilt about sin. Then there is the abuse of trust by a figure in authority, whom the child has been trained from the cradle to revere. Such additional resentments should make us all the more careful not to rush to judgment. We should be aware of the remarkable power of the mind to concoct false memories, especially when abetted by unscrupulous therapists and mercenary lawyers. The psychologist Elizabeth Loftus has shown great courage in the face of spiteful vested interests in demonstrating how easy it is for people to concoct memories that are entirely false, but which seem to the victim every bit as real as true memories. This is so counterintuitive that juries are easily swayed by sincere but false testimony from witnesses.
In the particular case of Ireland, even without the sexual abuse,